I want to welcome Doug Schultz, writer, director, and even producer of Memesis to upcoming discs. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm real good, Gino. Thanks for taking the time out.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us about the movie. Just saw it last night, so it's fresh in my head. I enjoyed it. And I guess the question that I have to ask first is the same thing that would happen to other people when I first saw the title is, what is it with this word mimesis? What does that mean, and how does that apply to the film?
Sure. Well, the word mimesis, you know, refers to imitation, and specifically the imitation of life in art. And, you know, it's a play on the word mimicry.
Sure.
And this is mimesis or mimesis, however you like to pronounce it. And we felt it a very apropos title for, you know, a story about people who imitate, you know, the thing they, you know, they love or obsess over. And, you know, we actually, in this day and age, there are so many, you know, films with the word dead or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. in it. We wanted to stand out a bit. And,
well, you will stand out.
Of doing that, so...
Yeah, this title will definitely help you to stand out. Did you ever worry about the marketing of the title? Was that ever a concern?
Yeah, well, you know, when we talked with our distributor, they, they talked to us about it, and, you know, I cited some other film titles that aren't necessarily, you know, the most common of film titles,
sure.
You know, but you're seeing more and more of that these days, you know, words like Insidious and...
Right.
And even the word memento and, you know, the list goes on, you know, but I think audiences are more accepting of that. You know, you don't have to
yeah.
be so cookie cutter these days. If anything, I think they want a refreshing title, and it kind of harkens to what I think is a refreshing storyline.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's certainly some truth in that, and this is a rather clever clever take on making a horror film, to be sure. And I don't want to give too much away, but I think even in the synopsis you talk about the fact that these are people who want to live a horror movie rather than watch a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I also noticed when I was looking up the title and such that there are some reference to it as Mimesis or Memesis, and then : Return or Night of the Living Dead. Was this something you had planned, or was that just something someone threw in there?
Yeah, initially when the film played the festival circuit and how it was written and cast, it was always just Mimesis. And, you know, but the film in question, you know, that is being, we'll say, mimicized, you know,
right.
is, you know, Night of the Living Dead. So it became the tagline, and I think the distributor, rightfully so, you know, and I'm ultimately on board, you know, of giving a bit of clarity
sure.
with regard to it. So I think it's a nice mashup, if you will,
yeah.
You know, when you see the DVD box art and see, you know, that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I get the impression that this is a planned or expected franchise. Is that where you're going with this?
Yeah, you know, the concept of, you know, extreme horror fans, you know, wanting to live out their classics presents itself with a natural, you know, well, you know, they did this, now, you know, what would another group do, and
mm-hmm.
so on and so forth. So, yeah, there's plenty of room, still refreshing room to explore the idea and have some fun with it, I think, for sure.
And you certainly tapped into it to a really peculiar mindset. I was head of security for a horror convention for years. And so I've seen how seriously some of these people take these things, even at horror conventions. And what you've done with Mimesis is you've taken this to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the intention, you know, to kind of you know, Hollywood's doing so many remakes and reboots, and you know, not saying good or bad, but I'm just saying, well, where do you go after that when you know when the movies are being remade and
right.
you know the it seems the next evolution would be for the fan to take control. You know, of the classic, and the fans would want to live out the classic. And,
right.
To me, that's a frightening but very fun concept at the same time.
Oh, indeed it is. Indeed it is. Did you get a chance to do any talking with George Romero before doing this project or even afterwards? Did you have any conversations with him?
No, you know, no, I haven't. You know, I would love to. You know, I initially talked the project over with one of the cast members from the original Night of the Living Dead, Bill Hinsman,
uh-huh.
who's notoriously, you know, been in the horror circuit for years, we were friends, and he loved the idea when I pitched it to him, and I said, you got to come out and be in this film, and he came out and just did a cameo before he passed away, mm-hmm. So I kind of got his blessing, and for me, that was enough, you know, I certainly, you know, hope, you know, others that were involved in the classic original Night of the Living Dead, are able to see Mimesis, and I hope they like it, you know,
I think they will.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk to George, no.
I think they will, and I have talked to George years ago, and I think he will appreciate it, too. He's got that kind of sense of humor. I think he's got that kind of sense of homage as well, that I think he will appreciate it, no question.
That's cool. Yeah, that's good to know.
Well, throughout the film as well, I see you pay some neat attention to bring out certain particular points of the movie, certain scenes and the way you create your set pieces and such. You're really trying to reproduce some of the atmosphere of the original movie without making this the original movie. How much effort went into that?
Yeah, well, a lot, and it's good that you're pointing it out. We had a lot of late nights and a lot of debates. You know, it started with the cinematographer. Stating, okay, well, you know, do we shoot this black and white? Do we, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, we are our own film. This is a modern day horror film about people that are just emulating. And so we tip the hat with, we use some Dutch angles that George, you know, was known for using in the Night of the Living Dead. And we do some traditional wide shots mm-hmm. for the master angles like George did. But then we would make it more modern. You know, we'd put a lot mm-hmm. of fluid dolly moves in and pushings and things like that. So, to summarize, there was a lot of conscious effort in drawing the line, trying to do homage, but still be your own
thing. Now, the other question I have are on some of the locations as such. Obviously, you looked for locations that were similar, and I take it most of this was filmed in Michigan. Was there any conversation, or was there any consideration to go to Pennsylvania and go to some of the original sites? Like, I've been to Latrobe, where the original cemetery is, and today it still looks very much like it did in 1968.
Yeah. You know, that was my first and ultimate plan, you know, was to set it in Pennsylvania and where the original was shot, but I understand the original farmhouse no longer exists, but yet the graveyard does, and I know there have been some fundraising efforts to keep the graveyard open and maintain it and things like that, but very conscious of it, but logistically and financially wasn't completely possible.
Right.
But we do some homages to that by... making some references to what city ours is in and things like that.
Right.
So.
And of course, you know, whenever you're doing a movie like this, budgets are always going to be a concern. So the next big question would be, what other sacrifices did you make because of budget? Things that you really wanted to do, but because of budget just wasn't going to be possible.
Yeah, well, there were some limitations in every department, I'm hesitant to say that because I feel that all the department heads did, a wonderful and amazing job. Our effects girl did amazing. Our wardrobe and our cinematographer. So everyone delivered, but they're, sure, you would always like a little more resource to add a few extra production days to slow things down, to take more time to film scenes and look back and maybe redo some things. And we really didn't have that luxury. To do any reshooting or whatnot, but overall a bit more of a budget probably would have, helped every department a bit more, and you would have noticed it in the film. But what's interesting is the film has this, I remember as a child watching George Romero's film, late nights, and even then as a kid, I wasn't a filmmaker then.
Right.
But I knew it was sort of a low-budget movie, you know? I think it just cries that, and that's what makes it so magical. And so when we approached this with very limited resource, I almost felt the need to make it kind of grainy and let characters fall into shadow and darkness and all that stuff, So there was a conscious effort in playing up the budget, if you will, the lack of budget,
sure.
I should say.
And there are some style points. You talk about making the film your own. One particular style point I noticed throughout the film is you've done this. There's a few occasions where you play around with the camera speed somewhat, like short bursts and stuff. Is that your attempt to kind of almost set this aside and maybe set a look for this franchise, if it's going to be a franchise, that this is, you know, something that distinguishes what this group's going to be like?
Yeah, there's definitely a conscious effort with that, you know, the very thing you're talking about, the acceleration of
right.
the rage. And that was being done specifically to kind of set a mood and a tone, to modernize the story, to specifically say, we're not back in 1969.
Right.
And so forth. And, yes.
Now, you also talk about, I listened to some of the commentary as well, and you talk a lot about, lifted scenes and deleted scenes and such. None of them showed up on the disc. Is there any reason for that, or are they coming in the future?
Yeah, it was a time, it was kind of a time crunch thing. Anchor Bay wanted to get the title out, and they wanted to get it out in the winter. We were initially poised for a spring-summer release date,
mm-hmm.
and, there are about half a dozen deleted scenes that would, that will certainly be interesting to the viewers and those that, that like the film and want more. There will probably be a director's cut, I'm assuming, at some point, and we'll include those.
Okay.
But it was more of just a timing issue to get the title out there, so.
Sure, I definitely understand that. And horror fans, by the way, will be very, very pleased to see, you've got Sid Haig in this thing.
You got it, yep, the man.
That must have been so. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to work with such a traditional guy.
Yeah, sure. Well, Sid's, in person, he's imposing. He's a big guy. And, but then when you introduce yourself and you start talking to him, he's the kindest, coolest dude you could run into. And, he brings this, he just sort of oozes a history of cinema and movies because he's been in so many and he's had such a wonderful career. So it's a real joy just to, in between takes, talk with him and get his take on things and consummate professional,
mm-hmm.
comes to set prepared and brings so much to the character. So it was a real honor to work with him.
Well, and I got to tell, horror fans will enjoy this, that I saw a side of Sid that I've never seen before, especially in the beginning when he's giving the lecture. You've never really seen him as this articulate, espousing type of cultured almost character, where he's giving this soliloquy on the horror movies and violence and stuff to the crowd. And I don't think we've ever seen him in that kind of a role before.
Bingo. Yeah, well, there you go. That's why I found ironic. Long short on that is, he's tend to play the bad guy, the sicko, and
mm-hmm.
You would almost expect him, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Sort of be the leader of this, and you're kind of waiting for that to happen, and that's where we intentionally cast him for that fact. And I thought it brought home the idea, that this is sort of a fan-driven, extreme horror fan-driven concept, where even the filmmakers, are kind of blown away by what's happening.
Well, where are we with the future with this? Can you give us any secrets? Can you tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the franchise?
Yeah, well, we're playing around with two other classics that we see consecutive, as sort of a parts two and three.
Uh-huh.
We sort of have some flexibility with which one goes first, but we've already sort of tipped our hat to that, and they're both films that hearken to, well before the 1970s,
right.
But they both made a very lasting imprint on American cinema specifically, and we feel that they would be perfect stories to help explore the psyche of the extreme horror fan. So if all goes well this summer, we'll be rolling on part two.
And that's what I was going to ask. So the time schedule is you're looking to start shooting on this summer.
Yeah. We did an intro scene already for it, but much more to come. So yeah, it should be exciting.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing the next installment, and hopefully maybe we'll be talking to you then about that one.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, for sure. Hope to talk to you again about it.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you. I'm very grateful that you took the time out to spend a few minutes with us here at Upcoming Dis, and we'll have a review up for the movie soon, and looking forward to more.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Well, listen, you take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. Right. Bye-bye. Bye.